There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to I'm Absolutely Fine, the podcast from The Mid-Alt that looks at all the glamour and indignity of being a grown-up. Hi, I'm Annabelle and I'm absolutely fine, but I don't know if this is a happy story or a horror story. I've been asked to a proper, really big party on Thursday night and I have said yes. And so there are various iterations of panic, starting with, what to wear. No idea, and too paralysed to even look in my wardrobe, which is, you know, now like a completely foreign country. I don't know what it's like. It's a dressy uppy thing. How am I going to get there? It's a combination of, oh God, I haven't really been taking Ubers. Will the Ubers even have any petrol? Will they turn up? Will it be raining? How do I get there? And then how do I get home? Should I drive? Because will I be able to park? But then I can't drink. So then I get there and then I start drinking. Or do I? Should I be having water for every drink, which I've never managed to do, even though I'm old enough to know better? And then will I want to leave immediately? Or will I want to stay? Who will I talk to? What will I say? You know, almost to the point of sort of, should I be sort of storing some anecdotes so that I can just manage the social interaction? So, you know, it's 4 days away, so I'm relatively calm now, but I think I'm going to be in a muck sweat of panic to the point of cancellation by the time it gets to tea time on Thursday. So
I love the idea of you actually sitting there and practicing like conversation, like, right, I need to brush up on the petrol crisis, what's going on in between China and Taiwan, or whatever, you know, just in case.
Or just a couple of amusing stories about when someone inevitably says, how was your summer, which I hate that question. Or so tell me about you, which I can't even begin to cope with. It sort of makes me spin on my heel. I mean, you know, when we first started sort of seeing people again in sort of May and June, I suppose, I had a new speciality, which was to have an internal panic and turn on my heel and turn my back on someone in the middle of talking to them. and then go off, take a few deep breaths and return and try to explain myself. So I'm hoping that ship has sailed, but I don't know what flavour of panic will make itself felt on Thursday. Anyway, we shall see. I can let you all know next week. Emily, how are you?
That's so exciting. I know, you could even like start conversations about whether or not you've got the heating on. I feel like that's the best, basically my chat at the moment.
Yes, one of my low points during as we came out of lockdown was I found myself discussing with someone our favourite pasta shapes. But I love those micro-boring conversations, you know, cycle lanes, you know, all that good stuff.
I'm absolutely fine, but I have realised that I am terrified of hot water bottles. And I didn't realise it fully the other day until I made one. And I honestly, I don't know what it was, the panic. Is it going to explode? Boiling water everywhere. Also the shaky hand as you pour into the kettle. Do you do it over the sink? How tight do you tighten it? And also if you tighten it so tight that you might never, ever get it off again.
I know. It feels all right, doesn't it, when a hot water bottle's on you, but not when you are on the hot water bottle.
Also, what happens if you roll over and it bursts? What happens if the dog jumps on it? And I mean, the peril.
Slashes it with its fangs.
I mean,
I know, but you know, I completely agree. And yet I have never heard an anecdote about someone being scalded through a popping hot water bottle, just as I've never actually heard about anybody shattering their coccyx irreparably by sitting in a deck chair. But when I look at deck chairs, I feel extremely unhappy and defended.
Exactly. And I now feel this way about hot water bottles. So we can add that to hot water bottles, deck chairs, quicksand, all things that I'm genuinely frightened
of. Hot water bottles, the act of making yourself a hot water bottle is supposed to be self-care, solace, refuge, all that good stuff. Ruined. Another thing bites the dust.
Another fucking thing. Anyway, okay, mid-alts. Now, we don't normally talk about babies or children on the podcast, but What happens when things get interesting? When you get to 37 and you're single and being a mother is the only thing you've ever really wanted to be. Our next guest made the increasingly popular and brave decision to go it alone. She bought some Danish sperm and off she went. Simple? Not really. Liv Thorne has charted her unusual journey to motherhood, first on Instagram and her accounts called Liv's Alone, and then in her book of the same name. She's here to tell us everything you wanted to know about solo parenting but were afraid to ask. Liv, how are you?
Hello, I am absolutely fine, but I've been trying to get hold of the DVLA. And it is literally making me want to rip my own organs out of my body through my nostrils. And I don't know why something that we are beholden to is so complicated to get hold of. And I hate adulting. This is the main problem. I just hate adulting. And the other thing that's happened today is there was an extraordinarily handsome man in the village with a gorgeous dog. And I've never seen him before. And will I ever see him again? And should I have followed him?
Yes.
Or like, where is he? So these are the things that are going through my mind.
Do you think
today
he was a figment of your imagination?
No, he wasn't, because my niece is staying with me today. And she came and she was the one that pointed him out. Liv, Liv, look. I said, oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
So
I love the idea that you had to get someone to vouch for his reality, because that's where we are now, isn't it? It's like, did I see this? Is this a mirage?
An extraordinarily handsome man with a gorgeous dog. Yes, it is.
Oh, my God. So Operation Village Dog Man.
I know. Is go.
Is press go on that.
Yeah.
So, Liv, when did it occur to you that things might not go in a straight line as far as having a baby was concerned?
Oh, that's so tricky, isn't it? Because, like, I can answer when I wanted to become a mother, because that was from age ever. You know, I wasn't one of those people that in their 20s was like, oh, no, I don't want kids. And then suddenly in their 30s, like, oh, God, no, I do. I always wanted them. I've been an auntie since I was 12. I am from a big family. Like, I always knew, in inverted commas, that that's what my life would be. There'd be a husband and a baby, or as many babies as I could get in my head. And then in my 20s, a lot of my friends started getting married quite young, sort of 23, 24. And I was like, oh my God, okay, that's not happening for me. I'm not even going on dates. Then by the end of my 20s, I was like, oh, okay, cool. I'm still not going on dates. And they're on baby number three, or, you know, and they just seem to have their shit together so young, and I couldn't even go on a couple of dates. And
I know, it's interesting when you look around, it's like marriage and babies was just happening to them.
Just happening. Like,
it was like they were tripping over husbands in the street.
Yeah. And I couldn't even, well, I say find a second date. Had I been looking, I'm sure I could have, but I...
So what was going on?
I've not realised this until fairly recently, but my parents died when I was younger. So my dad died when I was 12. My mum died when I was 17. And they'd both been ill beforehand. So from the age of about 7, there was quite a lot of, like, stuff kids shouldn't have to listen to or hear about, or palliative care, or, you know, just terms they shouldn't know. But to me, I thought that was totally normal because I'd had it in my life for so long. Yeah, so very recently, like embarrassingly recently, I realised that that actually made me have real issues with abandonment, essentially. So the trauma of my childhood, whilst I don't want to make everything like, oh, my parents died, so I can't possibly do anything. Had I realised it earlier, I don't think it would be an issue because I'd have got it sorted. But I suddenly realised that I wouldn't ever really go on a second date, or I wouldn't fancy people I knew might fancy me back, because the thought of them, of it working and them being able to break my heart and leave me, or I couldn't go through that kind of heartache again. But this was all really subconscious. I had no idea I was doing it until things like, yeah, writing the book, I was looking through and you're like, oh, okay. Oh, these things are, oh, okay. And I did that. And that guy asked me on a second date and I said no because he had blue shoes or whatever. You know, I'd just make up the most ridiculous things to not make anything go any further. which is fine unless you want a kid.
so you're in your early 30s, mm-hmm. and everyone's having babies. And is that when it struck you that, you know, that you might have a situation on your hands?
Absolutely. Yeah. By then, it's like I knew that fertility doesn't last forever. And I, whilst I really don't agree with the sort of very finite terms the fertility industry put in your mind, like at 35, you will combust and nothing will ever happen again and you will all die. And, you know,
they literally, it's almost like they tell you to put a date in your diary.
100%.
Yeah. On your third, and they use that phrase off a cliff.
Off a cliff.
So on your 35th birthday in your diary, you mentally have written off a cliff.
Yeah.
Which is also not true.
But also, if you're pregnant age 35, they say you're a geriatric mother. I mean, at what point, are we ready to face that
exactly.
as a language
so
term?
So I was off a cliff and then becoming a geriatric mother, and I was 36. You know, and you're like, are you kidding me? What? So there, so whilst I don't subscribe to that notion of that your fertility will jump off a cliff suddenly like Cinderella at midnight on your 35th birthday, also, there is scientific fact, obviously, that your fertility does decline. And I'd always joked about having a sperm donor. Wouldn't it be funny? You know, if I was still single in 15 years, oh shit, I still am. And I knew that I couldn't go to my grave not having tried to have a baby. If it didn't work, then I'd have to work through that and all that. But I needed to try to have a baby of my own. And so, yeah, that's when it was like... And also when friends started having babies and I'd just cry. Like, I'd try and be happy for them. And I was happy. That's not true. I was happy, but I was sadder for me than I was happier for them. And that's not a cool way to be.
I remember having to say to myself, you know, other people being pregnant doesn't make you any less pregnant.
Absolutely.
And but nonetheless, I couldn't walk through maternity departments. I couldn't watch nappy adverts.
Absolutely.
This sort of internal monologue of hate would start to ring in my ears as I saw pregnant women in the street. It's a very toxic thing to experience,
toxic.
Especially when you are, as you say in your book, carrying around your womb every day like empty Tupperware. You're just very aware of what's not happening. And we all know now we're meant to not live our lives according to what is not happening.
Yes. But that's really hard when there's something so visceral that you want to happen. Like, I tried really hard to ignore all of this, and I tried really hard to be a nice friend and to get involved with their kids and to be a good godmother. And I think I probably was, but it
took some personal cost.
It wasn't natural. Like, I found it every christening I had to go to, everything I found was about me. I made it about me. And that's just wild, you know. Kids' christening shouldn't be about me. It's about the gorgeous babe and their parents, and you know, or them saying, oh, Liv, I'm pregnant, shouldn't be about me. That's got absolutely nothing to do with me. But in my head, it was just a diatribe of, oh, God, okay, that's another person. So is there anyone else I know that's single now that I can
go so it's sort of, the terrible thing is that your own sadness starts to turn you into a bit of a monster.
Absolutely.
So was it a slow dawning for you that you were moving towards making this decision? Or did you wake up one morning and think, right, I'm on it?
No, it was quite slow. Yeah. And then it was when I was at my godson's birthday party, or I can't remember what it was, but I was in my godson's house in the garden, and his mum, my best friend, came and sat next to me, and I was holding him. He was cute in 18 months and just smiling giggly, and I was just weeping. And she just sort of took my hand like, come on, babe. And I was like, okay, yeah. You know, because there was no, I kept trying to put it off because I can't afford it. I can't, la, la, la. Am I, can I do it on my own? La, 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 la. But actually I was doing it because I was absolutely terrified. Because I didn't know. I didn't know where to start. I didn't know what to do. I didn't know.
And I think a lot of decisions with fertility, the gynecologist that I saw when I was getting pregnant said, you know, this is kind of like Monopoly. We can't really roadmap it because you don't know what you're going to do till you know what's just happened.
Yeah.
So you have to stay quite agile around it, which is difficult for something so big and scary. No, I'm not good at that either.
I'm not good at being agile in anything. I need things to be that I can control, which I soon learned pretty quickly. Fertility is the sort of preamble to parenthood of never being in control again. And it is a lottery. No one... It's like when people say that, oh, I went to this great whatever gynecologist, whoever, who assured me I could get pregnant within 3 cycles. I'm like, that's bullshit. Nobody can tell you you can. It is not... There's nothing that can be written in a script to say. So that's one thing I'd love people to know, is don't listen to that Well, don't listen to the finiteness of anything, whether it's positive or negative.
Yes.
It's, you've got to just take it for you as it comes. And yeah, there are things that are fact, but there's a lot that, there's no one else in the world that's my age, height, weight, genetics, with the same sperm, height, weight, age, genetics, that were going together at exactly the same time to know whether it would work.
So did you start by getting yourself all checked out? Was that your first step? Right, I'll get my bloods done, my follicles scanned, all of that.
I went to the doctor, my GP, and just said, I want to be pregnant. And to see if they could do anything, because financially I wanted to try and see if I could get anything on the NHS in terms of those blood tests. And that is a postcode lottery as to whether you can. I know some people that haven't been able to get those blood tests on the
NHS. I knew that IVF was a postcode lottery, but you can't even get your hormone levels checked.
No.
Your AMH and FSH levels if you live in the wrong place.
Yeah.
What a nightmare.
I know. So luckily my doctor was amazing, just said, let's get some bloods. And I was too scared to ask what the bloods were for. I just love looking away until I have to face something. And so I was like, okay, yeah, let's get bloods. Sure. I have no idea what for, but yeah, let's face them. And then it became clear that it looked like I had no fertility issues, as it were. All the levels were fine, la, la, la.
So that's why... get a letter back saying, using the word optimum, don't you? You get a letter back, optimum, which is all very pleasing.
For your weight and height and age, that's what they're saying.
Yes, exactly. That could be optimum, but not so optimum.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I certainly found that, yes, you start in a little bit of a haze, but then you've kind of got to attack it. You've got to run it like a business because no one else will. You think that your doctor will, but no one else does. No. Puts together all the coordinates and works out the dates and times. And oh my God, is that going to happen on a Sunday?
If it's a Sunday, it's... Yeah. That's the thing, is I had no idea what I was... I was just Googling stuff and hoping that those dots would all join together at some stage. And because every way you turned, there was another decision of something that I hadn't considered, like, would the sperm bank that I happened to have chosen in Denmark be accepted in the clinic I was using in London? Because some clinics don't take certain sperm bank deposits and all this. You know, it's just admin everywhere of decisions that there is no right or wrong answer.
Did anyone say to you during this process when you were in admin and in stress and probably slightly in disbelief? Did anyone say, don't do this?
No, not one. Not one person. Not one. And that's what sort of kept me going, is that I assumed there would be people that when I told them would go, oh dear.
I think that's our own shame, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Because you think, what's wrong with me? This has never happened. And so you assume the world will think, what's wrong with her?
Yeah, why on God's earth? And actually, no.
But
no,
people are very, very compassionate, aren't they? Yeah, and understanding.
Really. And yeah, I mean, so like my parents' friends, they're quite old school, you know, everything was very normal for them, in inverted commas. You know, they all got married young, they had nice lives, la, la, la. And so I just assumed some of them would be like, oh my God, what on earth are you doing? And actually, they were the ones that were like, of course you should, you know. And it was always people that, yeah, I assumed wouldn't be interested were the ones that would text every week going, just checking in, are you cool? You know, whereas other people who I thought would be more involved, I haven't heard from or as much as I would have thought, you know. And that's really interesting as well.
It does throw up those surprises, the treasures that reveal themselves, and then the people that you thought would be your absolute allies who are just sort of absent. And you understand, but it is a surprise.
Yeah, exactly. It is treasures that you're like, I didn't realise I meant that to you. I didn't realise, you know, I didn't realise you'd think of me when I wasn't having a glass of whatever with you. It's a constant stream of shit. What do? Do I know enough about that? Can I Google it? Is there the right answer?
Before you embarked on buying your sperm and having your treatment, which you had to pay for, how much budgeting did you do? Because in my experience of a situation not entirely dissimilar to yours, you have to be very grown up about the money, and also the money is the scariest bit in the way.
The scariest.
So had you been saving? Were you preparing?
No, I've never saved.
No, why would I do
so
that?
I'm so bad with saving. Like, I'm embarrassing with my poor money skills. And again, I'm now 42 and I'm just learning that saving's quite a good thing to do, Liv. Come on. And so what I did was remortgage my house. So I was bloody lucky that I had the option to remortgage the house. And so some of it was going to make do all the stuff in the house that needed doing, that all the leaks plumbed and the, you know, so that when the baby was there, we wouldn't be swimming through a bathroom or whatever.
You'd be watertight.
Yeah, exactly. And
yes, even if your body wasn't your house.
Yeah, my house was, so that was fine, thank God.
Can you put a figure on investigation to birth? How much? I mean, before we even get into, you know, what babies cost.
Mine was about 14-15 grand.
Yeah. And that was IUI, not IVF.
That was IUI IVS.
So the budget option.
Yeah, the budget option. Because for two reasons. One, I was really convinced that I didn't have a fertility issue. So my issue was that I was single rather than that my body wasn't able to reproduce. So I didn't want to go straight to IVF if I didn't.
But also, I think at 37, most doctors would advise you to give IUI a couple of goes.
Nope.
Did they not?
No.
That's
straight,
interesting.
Yeah, straight to IVF. And they were, the couple that I spoke to were really strong in their belief that I should go straight to IVF. And I get it because they're scientists and they like facts and
they look at the stats.
They look at the stats and they like, and I get that entirely. So.
But the trouble is with IUI, which for listeners is basically a medical turkey baster. So it's much less invasive and it's much less expensive than IVF. I think the problem is the stats of, I think, around 11% success rate for IUI are based on people who have been trying to get pregnant with their partner for a year or two, not on someone like Liv who... Yeah. You know, it could just, you could just snap your fingers and it will happen. You didn't quite snap your fingers and it happened.
No, I wish.
So, yeah, so you insisted on IUI.
I insisted on IUI because, I wanted to just see if it would all... I didn't really want to pump myself full of hormones if I didn't have to. Because my body's mad enough as it is. I didn't want to try and fluctuate it if I...
Yes.
But I was very ready to do IVF if I needed to. But, yeah, I chose IUI first financially, it was cheaper. Actually, obviously, it could mean that I had to do more IUI than one IVF.
But it is significantly cheaper.
It's not clear what you're doing.
How did you go shopping for your sperm? What were you looking for as you browsed?
Oh,
because I think often with these sperm banks, you can hear the man's voice, can't you? Maybe see a baby picture, you get a full medical history. That. What were you looking for?
So at the beginning, I was looking for someone who I'd want to go on a date with. Like, I was like, oh, he sounds fun. Oh, he likes dogs. Cool. Oh, he loves cooking. Ace. Oh, you know, he loves his mum. Brilliant. he likes to hang out with his granny. Really ace. Tick, tick, tick. And then I was like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, that will never come down into the baby. You know, that isn't the kind of stuff that's passed on. Well, it might be, but who knows. And because my family is riddled with various illnesses, I suddenly realised actually if I had the choice, which I did, I needed to go for health. So I sort of whittled them down. And obviously in a sperm bank, they vet people. So they're never going to let you buy sperm of someone who's likely to pass on a genetic disease. But I still want to, because you get the paternal and maternal up to gran and granddad, familial health. So how they died, when they died, you know, what their hair was like, all that sort of stuff. So I then whittled it down via health. And then I went for the, oh, cool, he said he loves whatever book.
So you did it the other way around.
Yeah. So I kind of siloed it out that way but again, I didn't know where to start. You don't know where to start. And there's no right answer. That was the worst. And I really like hard answers. So that's what I found tough is, once I'd got to it.
I mean, there isn't much reassurance around any area of fertility, let alone if you're doing it solo.
Yeah, and I suddenly... Well,
so
I
you're trying, you keep trying, you keep trying to find a way to feel safe,
yeah,
and there isn't one,
exactly,
because you're on
that.
This voyage.
Yeah, exactly that. And once I'd decided the donor, I kind of wanted a, you know, a America's Got Talent streamer type scenario. Yeah, you've picked the right one. And actually, I was just still there on my own in my living room thinking, fuck, is that the right one? But I'd added it to the basket and it was being shipped over, and, you know.
And
I
so you bought three straws, and how much was that? That's three goes.
That's three goes, yeah. Oh my God, do you know, I can't remember.
But thousands.
But yeah, including, because then they ask what shipping, how you want it shipped. I'm like, dude, I don't know. Surely there's an optimal way of shipping the sperm. I have no idea. Ship whatever will make it get here and get me pregnant. I don't know. You know, so I went.
So you're constantly, aren't you? You are constantly
making stupid
advice. We're making stupid decisions.
decisions.
No, but you're constantly taking advice from people you don't have any particular reason to trust, other than you've been told they're an authority, and you're having to press go on things.
Yeah, and people
in a way that you wouldn't make other decisions in your life.
No, and people ask me a lot of things on Instagram, and I'm like, I can't tell you. Like, yes, I've done it, but I'm not an authority. Like, I'm really passionate about telling people that this book that I've written isn't a handbook on how to get pregnant solo, because it isn't. It's about my life and how I did it and why I did it and that kind of thing. Because I can't tell you how to do it. I can't tell you whether Danish or USA or whatever sperm is better or how to
do it. But it might be a bit of a handbook on how you might possibly feel.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's more about feelings than. But people don't want to know about feelings because they know how they feel. So what they would like is someone to say, oh, choose the nitrogen option, because that will definitely get you pregnant. And yeah. I can't do that. No one can do that. So, yeah, again, I'd chosen the sperm, but then I had to choose a billion other things to see whether.
I mean, I think that in my experience with solo motherhood, by far the weirdest bit is the preamble. Is the thinking about getting pregnant, trying to get pregnant, and then being pregnant.
Yes.
Because it all makes sense if you manage to get, if you're lucky enough to get a baby in your arms.
Yeah. Well,
but the narrative of doing it by yourself prior to that is quite strange.
Yeah, really strange. And something you have to, I did a lot of grieving, I think, actually, for the life I assumed I was going to have.
Well, you have to reframe it, don't you? It's not the dream, it's a different dream.
And it's
there's no point trudging towards it in anger and resentment.
Absolutely. You've got to go with, like, cool, this is, you know, yeah, that didn't happen. And I had to grieve that to make it kind of go away so that I could go on with, like, whoa, I'm going to get pregnant, this is wild. As opposed to, oh, God, I'm getting pregnant on my own.
And then you have to do all that stuff. I mean, in some cases, secretly, what people secretly do when they're trying to get pregnant, where you give up drinking.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you're quietly having your IUI, your IVF, you're not exercising, you're not having hot baths, you're not doing all these things you're not meant to do. You know, again, sort of slightly by yourself in a vacuum. So it's all, there are lots of echoes in your own head around that, aren't
Which
there?
Which is why I started to talk about it online. Because actually, that was, for me, as much
too lonely. What do you think was your lowest point in this journey?
Pregnancy.
Was it?
Yeah, actually.
So, okay, so you went off, you had your IUI, you had it four times,
yeah.
Did it occur to you in those that it might not happen? Were you starting to get nervy or was it still steady?
I told myself I'd do four IUI and then I'd do two IVF. I had to give myself a limit because I am someone that doesn't understand limits I'm abundant in everything.
Yeah, so, we call it hopping on the escalator. And when you get on the escalator, you don't know where it will take you. So you have to have some idea of your own boundaries in your mind.
Because otherwise I knew I'd be 65, still trying and living in a trolley.
Cave.
You know, in my brother's drive or something. Because that would have been. And so I had to give myself parameters. I knew that. That was the only thing I did know, is that I had to give myself parameters.
So you were heading towards your fourth cycle of IUI, knowing that this was going to be your last of this iteration.
Yeah.
Things could get a lot more intense and expensive. So,
yeah.
So were you feeling worried?
No, I knew that it wasn't going to work. So in my head, I was like, well, this isn't going to work. I'm just doing it because I told myself I'd do it four times. And I am stubborn as an ox. So if I tell myself I'll do something, I'll do it, whether I know it's the wrong thing or not, you know. I'm quite irritating. And so the fourth guy, I just sort of drove up to London, got it done, left, came home, didn't think about it, didn't matter. The 2-week wait didn't really happen because I wasn't going to get pregnant. It just didn't matter.
Because the first one, IUI, you were like, you got like your everything waxed. You were wearing heels.
I had a manicure.
You had your hair done. Oh, it was like, yeah. Here I am prepared for exactly. The procedure.
It's funny, isn't it, with this stuff, how you go from having a wax and a pedicure to suddenly just walking in the room and going, where are the stirrups?
Yeah, like, do whatever you need to do to me. I don't care. Yeah. Put it in. Yeah. I'm here. Yeah. My knickers are off. We don't need to chat about it. Go in. But yeah, no, the first time I was like, oh, hi. No, I'd definitely make a good mother. Look at me. I've got a waxed vagina and my nose is perfectly manicured. So, oh, whatever. Yeah, you don't know my name. Sure, it's Liv Thorne. It's here, you know. And of course, that was the one I got pregnant on.
We interrupt this broadcast with a news flash.
Yes, I am getting a third piercing, a third ear piercing, which means I'm now obsessed with creating the perfect stack. Listen, I'm a proper amateur because I only got my ears pierced for the first time 2 years ago. But naturally now I want to really load up. Never go halves. And it's also confusing. And plus the confusion of the consumer guilt.
Well, hold on there. We have discovered a fantastic jewellery brand called Ana Luisa, that's A-N-A-L-U-I-S-A, whose entire mission is to prove that high-quality jewellery shouldn't cost the planet. So it's guilt-free shopping that doesn't cost the earth or the earth. And they are giving I'm Absolutely Fine listeners 10% off with the code absolutelyfine at analuisa.com. It's a treasure trove.
Anyway, back to my perfect step.
You're like... stop with the science bit.
So we've chosen a mixture of some mid-sized gold hoops and chunky little huggies and cheeky sort of lightning bolt drops, that kind of thing. And they're giving us real joy. And there's quite a lot to be said for joy at the moment. Also, they're well-priced enough to make quite thrilling presents. So if you're looking forward to Christmas with kind of panic, you might want to get busy. They release new jewellery collections every Friday at analuisa.com, A-N-A-L-U-I-S-A.
Now, use the code ABSOLUTELYFINE for a 10% discount. Now, we are big fans of their metal and their message. And if you head over to Insta, you can see our stacks. Oh, that sounds rude.
Yeah, everything sounds rude if you try hard enough. Anyway, 10% off with the code ABSOLUTELYFINE. But then pregnancy was quite hard.
Pregnancy was awful. And
that, why was that?
I was sick the whole time. I don't think I had high premises, but I think I was probably on the verge of it at the beginning.
And obviously you're having to work and take responsibility for everything because there's no one to pick up the slack.
No, and I had a job and I was also trying to set up a new business with some friends and I had building work going on at home and it was all quite a lot and all I'd wanted to do was get pregnant all my life. And now I'd made my dreams come true and I felt like shit.
It's so unfair.
Oh, it's so awful. And it consumed every waking moment, the sickness. So there were a couple of times in the middle of the night when I was pregnant and the house didn't feel like it was mine because there was building work going on and, you know, and I was just lying on my bathroom floor, just hugging the toilet in tears, like, what the fuck have I done? How arrogant am I to think that I could do this on my own, you know? Yeah, those were definitely the lowest. And then I moved in with friends for some of it, and then my sister for a bit, because the building work was too bad, I didn't have a kitchen and stuff. And that was tough too, being with other people and wanting to tell them how to live in their own house, because I was like, please don't eat now, because I'm going to be sick if you eat now. Please don't make noise, because, you know, I was just... really dramatic about everything because my body was just, and everyone kept going, it means it's a healthy pregnancy. And I was like, I don't care. I'm going to vomit on your fucking shoes in a minute. Back up, Janet. But the first couple of weeks, that was quite tough too because I was so happy I had this baby and I knew I loved him. But if you took him away from me, I wouldn't have cared at that stage.
And how has it unfolded for you since then?
It's got... better every day. But the first time, like I say just now, I knew I loved him, but if you'd taken him away, I wouldn't have batted an eyelid. My sister took him when he was about 3 weeks old to her house overnight. And I know loads of people will be like, what, 3 weeks? What did you... And she kept saying, are you sure you want me? And I was like, yeah. And she was like, oh God, okay. So took him, because she wanted to see her family. And, you know, and I think she was a bit... worried about my kind of yeah absolutely bye. But actually I went home, slept for 16 hours, picked him up, and when he came back I knew I loved him. And actually that time away completely saved me in him, And he held my little finger and I was like, oh God, yeah, I'm in. It's finally happened. Because I presumed that love would come.
Well, I think that's another unhelpful narrative.
Yeah,
is that
absolutely.
The baby will emerge, and before they can even deal with your placenta, you're feeling a love like no other.
Some people love that first 2-3 weeks. I wouldn't go through that again for love nor money. And I had 24/7 help. My sisters were there 24/7, and I found it unbelievable. But since then, it's just got better and better. Yeah, I mean, he's now 3.5, and he's funny, and he's cool. And when he's not, like this weekend, there was one day that I could have happily given him to anyone that walked past. But that's because he's 3.5. Like.
Yeah, yeah.
And then yesterday he was just delightful and kept going, oh, mummy, you're my best friend. You really are beautiful. I'm like, oh, my God, you are good. Well done.
You can stay.
He's just started preschool and I'm not coping with that at all. And that's the same for whether I was doing it on my own or whether Dave was next to me holding my hand walking him to school. Like,
it isn't the same.
Do you not think?
No, it's not the same. I think that often what people say to you is they sort of say, oh, well, you know, husbands are so useless. It's just the same as doing it by yourself. It's not the same. And I think you should allow yourself that you are doing more.
I do sometimes. But there are some things where I'm like, fuck, I'm so glad I'm on my own. Because my friends, like the chat they all have about the fact that someone's not put the bins out or they're away again this weekend or... You know, the mother in law.
I know, at least you don't have the resentment.
I don't have any resentment. Like,
but you also don't have anyone who's going to split the mortgage payments with you.
No, exactly. I don't have... So it is swings and roundabouts, but there's a lot of good sides to it as well. But Christ,
and you're funny in your book about the sort of, you know, understandable / annoying things that people will say to someone who's made the decision that you have. And what sort of things have you found people saying to you?
It's always things like, and I don't really care about, like, I'm not someone who's sensitive to anything, really, but there are some things I'm like, oh my God. And it's the, I would have done the same if I hadn't have met Dave when I did. And you know that they met Dave when they were 24. And they really didn't have to live their adult life single. You know, and you're like, oh my God, you would have done it. Okay, fine.
Fine.
And the one thing that really winds me up is... Liv, can you come over to stay this weekend? Because so-and-so is away. You know, the partner's away. You know, and you're like, what to...
Oh, because... yes, you said in your book, you said that they say, yes, because I'm single parenting weekend. And it's like,
do you want to come?
Single parenting isn't about the day.
No.
It's about, it really isn't. It's about many, many machinations
or that
and plans.
Kind of, I'm scared because Dave isn't here tonight. Can you come? Like, I have to sleep on my own with the light on every night at 42 years old.
And also the trouble is because families tend to draw a bridge and want to either be by themselves often at weekends or with other similar shaped families.
I really felt
they
that.
Might only want them you want you there when it's single
when
parent
it's single,
weekend.
Because it
did
works
you find
for them.
That you were left out, not sort of shut out, but sort of left out of conventional family
absolutely.
Business.
Absolutely. And even sometimes and I need to caveat this by saying no one does this deliberately. They're not doing it. It's just subconsciously. But like, even my family would be like, oh, we're having a family weekend this weekend. Like, oh, okay. And yeah, friends will invite me if their husbands aren't there, or I won't be invited over for dinner parties, really, because in my head, I assume it's because I'm not bringing anything to the party, or we're not part of the rugby club, or, you know, there's just things that, and again, like I said, no one's doing it deliberately, but you do become quite an ostracised, is way too big a word, but there are things that you're like, oh, okay, I'm not invited to that.
Yeah,
then.
I agree, ostracised is too big a word.
Much
I'm not
too
sure
big.
What the right word
no,
is, but you're somehow not part of the fabric.
Yeah, maybe, yeah.
Well, you're just the anomaly, so people don't know where to put you, so they just panic and don't.
Yes, they panic and don't. And again, no one's doing it deliberately, but sitting on the other side, I think people assume I'm constantly out having a fun time because I'm single. But actually now I don't go out. And the more I don't go out, the more socially awkward I am. And like you were saying, Annabelle, about going to the party on Thursday, the thought of going to a party on Thursday night where I'd have to dress up and maybe drink and have small talk with people makes me want to...
I think also if you're a solo parent, I think that you get scared of the tiredness in a slightly different way.
Yes, so my friends are real drinkers, and I used to be a real drinker, and I don't drink so much anymore because I can't parent. I put sleep over everything. That's how I survive.
I'm sure people ask you all the time, should I do this?
I can't answer that.
What advice do you give them if they decide that they're going to do this?
Yeah, if they decide they're going to do it, is save every penny you have. The financial implication of solo parenting, if you want to be able to afford to take them to the zoo or be able to afford to go out with your friends for, you know, just, and again, that's from a place of privilege, and I get that, but that is what I'm used to. But that is what I'm used to. And so stripping that out entirely is hard.
So in other words, to try and find a way to continue to live in the manner to which you've become accustomed because of your own hard work.
Because of my own hard work, exactly. And like, I budget to do fun things in the month, and that's what I budget to do it. But I had to sell my house because I got in so much debt because of childcare, because childcare costs are, if you don't have any, I don't know, I don't have any parents, so there was no one that was going to do it for free for me. And I chose to have a baby on my own. I made this decision, but I didn't realise how hardcore childcare costs were in this country and how rigid it is and how frigging ridiculous it is. And so, yeah, my one thing would be is don't just plan for the financial implications of fertility, which is what everyone thinks about. It's when they're here. It is tough. It's constant. There is childcare costs, or you want them to learn to swim. And do you know how to teach a kid to swim? I could probably give it a go, but would it be the best way? Or do you know what I mean? Just everything costs money.
So it's interesting, isn't it? You're not saying it's nothing to do with loneliness or look after yourself or any of those kind, those sort of self-care messages that we're all, the COD psychology and the stuff that we all live in now. Yes. It's actually really look very hard at the money. Is that that's the takeaway for you?
Because I think you should be thinking about all the other things about you anyway. Like I think, like I say, I prioritise sleep over everything. That's what I do. And if that goes, our whole world goes to shit.
And what about male role models? You know, when there's always a whisper from somebody somewhere thinking, oh, but, you know, is it ethical? A child without a father?
Isn't that weird? Well, like, I have no father. And I know what I'm missing because I knew my dad. Whereas Herb, he knows that other people have dads, but he doesn't have someone that he misses. So he doesn't know what that shape is to miss. And in terms of male role models, I have two brothers. He has five godfathers. I have
Give these people their jobs.
Absolutely, man. And I've got really close, I'm really lucky, all of my male friends, you know, they're very involved. They love Herb. Yeah, I don't think Herb will ever think that. But we talk about it all the time. I don't keep anything away from him. He knows already he doesn't have a dad. We talk about it. And that conversation will grow and grow and grow the older he gets and the older he can understand how it came about. And like, I've had made into a book his donor's file and had it illustrated so that it's not quite so dull. just so that we can go through it and go, oh, look, your donor liked whatever, pepperoni pizza.
Aren't there sibling registries?
Yeah.
So he could potentially find siblings later if he wanted to.
If he wanted to, he can do whatever. And the donor's an open donor. So when Herb is 18, he can find his donor. And that's
which is a decision that you make, isn't it? What about romance? How do you feel about that now?
Oh, my God. I'd love to be in love. Like, I say all this solo parenting and all that. And that is, in my head at the moment, very separate to me being in love. Like, I'd love to be in love. I'd love to share life with someone. I'd love it. I wouldn't know where to start. No one has ever once said, oh, I know someone that I could hook you up with. So I don't know whether I'm just like an anomaly.
I think sometimes when someone sees you, when people see you with a baby, you look quite complete.
Yeah, there is that. But there was 20 years before that that I didn't.
Motherfuckers.
Yeah. So, yeah, I don't know. I'd love it. But, yeah, I suspect whilst I'm a catch, there's no partner, there's no mother-in-law. I've got my own house, got my own teeth. I suspect I'm also quite hard work. So God knows. But I figure all my friends, well, not all my friends, but as in people are all going to start getting divorced soon. So there's going to be another influx of men at some stage. Sure.
Blood flow.
Also, yes. There's a hot, handsome, dog-walking guy. Exactly. There I mean, this is the beginning of everything. Can you imagine?
Do you know,
there's
no way he's single.
I think we have to let you go, Liv, because I think it's time for you to go for a nice long walk in the village.
Oh, no.
And peer through some windows, and you know, no one will think you're weird.
I'll
it's fine.
I'll be in prison by far.
Yes, exactly. Terrible God, advice. Then yeah. We'll look after her. Yeah, no. But I mean, you know, thank you for writing a book that's so generous with everything that you went through, because I think, you know, a lot of women are thinking about this now if they're not doing it.
Passionate that people, and not people that are just thinking about it, just other people to get a perspective on it. And if you are thinking about it and your mum's being a bit like, should you really, darling? You know, these are the thoughts that you're having that you might not be able to express to them. Or I just want people to read it. And loads of people have told me that they've asked for it to be put in their libraries or it's being given out on their midwifery course. And I'm like, yes, that's exactly it. Thank you.
Because there is another way.
There is another way, and it's fine. Don't make your whole 20s and 30s just funnel focused about the fact it might not happen for you and that's all you're thinking about, because it could happen for you and it's cool. It will be fine.
You know, you're as brave as what you want. So if you
want
it. Yeah, you know, get yourself, you know, armed and dangerous and off you go into your future. So congratulations on your book, baby, on being a sensation. Thank you for coming to see us.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Liv.
Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to Annabel Rifkin and Emily McMeekin of The Mid-Alt. Our book, I'm Absolutely Fine, is out now. If you like what you hear, please rate, review and subscribe.
And we'll just leave you with this thought. When life shuts a door, open it again. It's a door. That's how they work.